Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, you know what? It's the start of the gift-giving season, and if you have an electronic device on your list, we have some advice for you. Jesse LeGroup back with me. He's the technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin Division of Information Technology, or DOIT, as we like to call it. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects, and he has some tips on when to shop for deals on those kinds of electronic devices. He'll also answer your computer-related questions as well, so I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And Jesse LeGroup, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
You've done a little research for us on when's the best time to shop for those digital devices. You know, is it Black Friday? Is it Cyber Monday? Is it Thanksgiving Day itself? What do you think?
Well, I think the one thing we're seeing is they're going to change everything. So what we know today from last year is going to change again this year. And a lot of people have done quite a bit of research into really which one's better, Cyber Monday or Black Friday, which were the two primary days, but now Thanksgiving Day itself is becoming much more prevalent for a lot of deals. So there's a lot of things that are just Thanksgiving Day. From, you know, at least one source of information that I'd found, Thanksgiving Day is the biggest day now. It's not even Black Friday or Cyber Monday. And
for electronics.
For electronics or even other items. So clothing. And depending on the kind of electronic you want, they said, you know, TVs, for example, are still a good thing to do on Thanksgiving Day. Most people, you know, Black Friday really is the big day. And there are still some items that you might want to get for Cyber Monday. But it's still looking at data that was from last year. It could very well be different. And even Cyber Monday is more than Cyber Monday. You know, you look at different retailers, and Cyber Monday is 3 days or it's 5 days. Yeah. And it can start sooner than, you know, you would normally think, a day or two ahead of time. It could start a week ahead of time. So a lot of groups will have various sales throughout the week leading up to Thanksgiving, and then afterwards, and then you fall into Cyber Monday, and they might even have a couple sale days after that. And it's difficult to know where to go because there are so many different retailers, and I think a lot of people go to, you know, common ones, Newegg or Amazon, for virtual stores, and there's a lot of other physical stores. So it's a very confusing landscape, but if you know exactly what you want, you can probably hone it in a little bit. But it also feels a little bit random at the same time.
Well, I tell you what, I went to a store yesterday, and it was advertised as a pre-Black Friday sale. And I bought a pair of pants for 55% off, which seemed like a pretty darn good deal to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the site that I found, they even talked about, you know, where to get clothing. And in this case, you know, if you wanted normal clothing, it said Black Friday. But if you go to shoes, well, it could be Cyber Monday is a good day, but also so is Thanksgiving, but less so Black Friday. And it's looking at historic information, but that's, you know, the one piece that we never know. What is it going to look like this year?
Yeah.
I don't know. We can only guess from the data that we have in the past, or what we're going to hear as people start publicizing the different sales that they're going to have. But, you know, this website also had a listing of every single store when they were going to open.
Oh, my goodness.
And not only for Black Friday, but for Thanksgiving Day. So, you know, what's the time you want to be there for Thanksgiving Day? So when the doors open, you can get that TV that you want. So it's there's a lot of, you know, hype around the sales during this time period.
Do you have, you know, let's say, I don't know what I want to get for Lorraine or somebody, and but I wouldn't mind getting something digital. Do you have some tips or what's on your list for great digital gift ideas?
And I think it always goes along the person, so kind of what's going on in their life. And so for me, I actually just got something that I neglected to think I could have probably waited a month or two, but I just got a Fitbit.
Ah, okay.
And it was because, you know, whether it was, you know, to be a little bit more health conscious, but I actually got it for a little bit of self-awareness. So, you know, it has the heart rate monitor.
Yeah.
And somebody, you know, I knew somebody, they were actually giving a speech, and they noted how their heart rate rose. I'm like, oh, that'd be an interesting piece of information for me to have just randomly at other times. Like, hey, what is my body doing? Maybe it's doing nothing, and that's something to know too. So I got it for that reason. But it was that other piece of, it wasn't something I was ever planning to get.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot of people getting, I'm like, oh, I don't want that. And all of a sudden, oh, there's this little bit of information that I could get from it that I wasn't anticipating. A lot of the athletics type items out there are becoming very popular for a variety of reasons. I mean, I got it for not even specifically really a health related reason.
Mm-hmm.
But so many different things going out there technology-wise can be used in a variety of different ways. And it always depends on that person. You know, what are they doing?
Yeah.
What they like to do?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's finding the technology that's going to give you something that you never thought of. And when I got this, I did not... It has, you know, information on sleep cycles.
Yeah.
Which is actually just interesting. Every morning I wake up and I get a little bit excited. How did I sleep last night? So it's cool to learn a little bit about yourself with this technology. And I think those are becoming increasingly popular and probably will continue to do so. But a lot of those are, I think, are hot items.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have some other hot items. One, and Barb, we're going to get to you in just a minute here. But I did want to mention... the new iPhone, the $1,000 iPhones that I saw long lines of people queuing up to get them. Any reaction from you on those phones?
And it's interesting thinking about that now. I think the iPhones, the new technologies, they're always going to have a lot of different improvements with it, with the screens, the cameras, a lot of things that we really do expect to be improved.
Yeah.
For me, I find myself not caring as much about it. but really the selling points that you're going to find are, you know, how sensitive is it?
Yeah.
What is the quality of the display? How much storage does it have? All the same things that make other devices more expensive, it's the same thing. It's just on a phone. So, you know, one of the biggest things between, you know, the iPhone X versus the iPhone 8 is the display and the contrast ratio. It's so much higher on this other display that even the iPhone 8 Plus, it's still magnitudes better on this new phone. And I remember even when they had the Retina displays for the Apple laptops, and when they came out, it's like, oh, it looks so, and it actually did look much clearer. You found out that an icon that you had in your old Mac OS system, it looks grainy because that level of resolution just wasn't available, and you had no idea, you know, what that would really do. So, I mean, that's a portion of it. They're just increasing a lot of the other items that we've already seen, just in different ways, a little bit more usable. But for most people, day-to-day, if you're just surfing the web, it may not be...
What's the difference?
Right, but if you want to get, you know, that nice HD quality video, you know, you're watching things on the go or moving around, it's always different for different people, but, you know, the camera is basically the same. That display is a really, really large selling point of the phones, but even a lot of their phones still do 4K resolution.
Yeah.
So you can get great display from a lot of the phones, but also, you know, the video recording. So if you not just want to view, but if you want to record, so all those features are just, you know, beefed up a little bit. If you want all the great things, the best resolution, the best camera, not just for still, but for motion, you know, get the biggest phone that can do everything. But it is, and it's $1,000. It's not an insignificant cost of money, but, you know, thinking about the amount of hardware that's in that phone, there's a lot of hardware, and it's expensive. It's a computer.
Yeah.
It sits in your pocket, and, you know, I'm used to a phone being for phone calls, which I don't use it for, of course, anymore.
No.
It's a little computer in your pocket that you expect to do all these things with, including, you know, recording where you're going. Most people don't have a separate camera. So all these other features have just increased the feature set of the phone and increased the price. And now we can just do it better, which just makes it more expensive.
Talking today with Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead with Do It, the UW Division of Information Technology. Questions for him maybe about Black Friday or Cyber Monday, or maybe you've got a problem with your computer or your software, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Barb in Milwaukee's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Barb. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. First thing I want to say is I am 64 years old, and I got a Fitbit in March, and it was the best thing on the planet. I was walking only 3,000 steps a day, and I've gotten it up to like 7,000. So it's not 10, but it's still phenomenal, and I appreciate it.
So a good Fitbit for you.
Go ahead.
So I say the Fitbit was a good fit for you.
Yes, it was. My question is about my computer. We have a laptop, a small computer, and I can't even tell you the kind it is because I'm not at home. But it is the major computer that we use. And on our email, which is Exec PC, we can't get into it anymore. I can get into it on my phone, my cell phone, but I can't get into it on my regular computer. Is there something I'm supposed to do?
And when you access your email, are you using a specific email program like Outlook or something else?
I'm using execpc.com.
Okay.
And have you, just as a thought, have you turned off your machine and restarted it?
100 times.
Okay, good. Just so we know.
And do you use a specific web browser when you're going to try to view your email or even the Exec PC website?
Yes, I do. I use the general one. Is that Google or something?
It's not
Foxfire or anything weird. It's just plain old regular one.
Okay. And so when you do it on your phone, do you open up the Safari browser and log in, or do you use the Mail app that's on your phone?
I use the Safari browser.
Okay. What I would try to do, at least on your home computer, just to see if, because normally I'm gonna. Do you get a specific message actually when you try to view it on your home computer?
No, it just doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would try a different browser just to see if it's going to work. And there are several out there, and I'll have a couple other things you can try too. So normally Internet Explorer, and it might be Edge, you know, which is mm-hmm. the newly updated browser.
Yeah.
If you had some Windows updates, maybe it just doesn't work with the latest browser, which is a possibility. I would recommend trying Google Chrome. I would also recommend trying Firefox. Both of those browsers are completely free. At the very least, you can test to see if it works or not, and then you can always uninstall them. Another item I would try, especially since you are using a web browser, I would actually write down what message you do get on the screen, if you get any, because that could give you an idea of what the problem is. But when I ever have issues with a web browser, one thing I always like to do is just check my computer to see if it has, you know, anything bad on it. And it may have just been things that are kind of mucking up the works. But there are one program I recommend is Super Anti-Spyware, which is a program that just, it kind of does a health checkup on your machine to see if there's anything that might be causing issues, which you may or may not really see, but it can help to find those and clean those up.
And what's it again, Super?
It's Super Anti-Spyware.
Super Anti-Spyware.
Does it cost anything?
It is completely free. They do have some other features you can pay for, but a lot of these programs that do these features, they're completely free and they have a great feature set. They have some limitations, but they actually work really, really well. And I've used it in the past. I use it on my home computer when I need to. But if you are having issues with your web browser for whatever reason, it can help to clean those up. So I'd recommend doing that just to make sure everything else is, you know, okay on your computer. And I guess just to see if there's, you know, a potential other problem, do you have any issues viewing any other websites or doing anything?
No. Okay. Would there be anything in settings? You go back to settings and go to email in settings.
And it could be, you could go to, and if you're using your web browser, what I'd recommend is you can always go to the tools. I think it's tools menu.
Yeah.
And they have an option for settings. You can reset those settings to kind of factory default in case something got messed up there. Some of those other programs like Super Antispyware will help to clean that up. But it does. It's interesting that it's very specific to that one website.
Yeah, it really is.
I would try another browser just to see if that's the case. I think one difference you probably have with your email at home versus using your phone or something else is probably the internet connection that you're using. And you have a laptop, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Have you tried to access your email at a coffee shop or using a different internet connection?
No.
Yeah.
If you do have wireless on your laptop, it's worth a try just to go somewhere else, hook it up to wireless, because, you know, it could tell you, is it my computer or is it my internet? You know, maybe it is your internet. There are a lot of things that could cause the issue, and it could help you at least rule out one of those problems. Because if it turns out that you go somewhere else and it works fine, you come back home and it's broken, well, it's probably not your computer. It's probably your internet connection in some way. But it can help you at least narrow down
the problem.
Right.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, from the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology, here on the Ideas Network. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Larry Mueller here with Jesse LeGrew, talking about your computer. Katie in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Katie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I want to get a Chromebook for my kids for Christmas because they pretty much have to do their homework mostly online. And I have four kids, and they usually fight about who gets to do their homework first. So I thought a Chromebook would be, you know, a cost-effective way to get two computers in the house. And I'm also wondering, are there parental controls on any certain Chromebooks, say, to maybe for web browsing so that they can't get whole access to the web, or maybe I could download just certain apps that they could just go to their homework websites or their email to see what their homework assignment is.
Yeah, a lot of assignments and many schools are done now on Chromebooks, so including my daughter's.
Right, so you understand.
Yeah, I understand very well. What do you think, Jesse?
There's several things that you can do. Some of them are built into the Chromebook itself, and some of them are add-on products. So they have one item that's part of the Chromebook, which you can create what's called a supervised user.
Mm-hmm.
And that supervised user, you can, you know, create certain controls about what they can view, what they can kind of action on a day-to-day basis, and gives you a little bit more visibility in kind of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one aspect. But there's so many different applications out there that'll actually help you to do this. And a lot of them are programs that are also available on PCs and Macs. One of the most popular one is NetNanny.
Okay.
That one's been around for quite some time. And as far as I've heard of any kind of parental controls, that one's been there. And that's one of many. I think it really depends on how well you want to lock it down. If you there's kind of two schools of thought with looking at any kind of controls, whether it's for parental or other reasons. You know, it could even be a kiosk sitting in a library.
Mm-hmm.
It could be don't allow anyone to do anything, and when they need something, you know, turned on, turn it on for them.
Yeah.
Or there's the other end of the spectrum, which is we're going to allow you to do whatever you want. When you go to something you shouldn't, we're going to turn that off.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these controls will have various ways to do this.
Okay.
I would honestly leverage the ones that are the most user-friendly, the ones that are probably the ones the most developed for the largest amount of time, and NetNanny is one of those. It also, you know, consistently gets pretty good reviews from individuals that do use it. But that's one of multiple products out there. But I would start with that supervised Chromebook user and then just see the different features that you can do with that. and then kind of go from there, because you might be able to get 90% of what you want with the supervised users for the Chromebook.
Okay.
And then if you need to, you can turn on other features, you can uninstall other programs, or you can add, you know, a program that can allow you to do a lot more granular items.
Okay. That supervised user, do all brands of Chromebooks have that, or do even PCs have that?
And it looks like
Chromebooks have it.
Yeah, it looks like Chromebooks have that. They don't really have the same, it's not called the same thing on Windows.
Okay.
They do have parental controls that you can set up. I don't know if they're as user-friendly. Granted, I haven't set up the parental controls for, you know, both.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's going to be a little bit different. You can do it for either, but that's one reason why if you use NetNanny and you have a subscription, they have packages where you can kind of buy a family plan. You install it on all your computers, and it allows you to manage it in a little bit different way, mm-hmm. but where you don't have to learn how to do it three ways. You just do it once, and it works on all your computers. So that might be another reason to actually go with a different solution that you can purchase, because they're going to give you a little bit more flexibility with those other devices that you might have.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you have a recommendation on a reasonable priced Chromebook?
Ooh, I do not.
About $100.
Yeah,
they're all about the same. Right?
Yeah, and yeah. I'd say if it's for general use, homework, everything else, I'd say. Normally, I don't get the very entry level, but I would actually go to a store, play with it, see what it looks like, see if you can open up a document. It's probably going to work for most things, but it also will depend on the school and what kind of homework assignments they have. If they do have a lot more multimedia,
you should check with the schools.
Okay.
I think it's to see what they're recommending.
Do you think the storage matters, like the amount of storage on it?
It could matter.
Probably not.
But yeah,
for
probably
school work.
Because everything would just be streamed. I'm not real computer savvy. So.
Yeah, and even for storage, a lot of the Chromebooks, if they can use external media, so a flash drive or something else,
okay.
Most flash drives, I mean, you can get them in such immense sizes now.
For so little money.
You could, as long as you can use a flash drive, you're good, and then you have an option. So even if it doesn't have enough storage now, you can buy a flash drive and add more storage. Great. And then it's something they can move from device to device, which opens up, you know, other complications. But there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah. Good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie. We have Linda in Wausau up next. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a visually impaired businesswoman, and I travel fairly often for my job. And I use my iPhone. I do use it as a phone. I use it for texting, and I use it for emailing.
Okay.
And so I use the voiceover and voice recognition features. And it seems to me that Apple has very little interest in developing and improving the business application features of the iPhone. And I've heard... recently, I read something about BlackBerry making a comeback and that they're more interested in business applications for their devices. And I'm just wondering what you know about the BlackBerry and their voice recognition capacity, and if I might be better off switching to a BlackBerry from the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like voice recognition has gotten worse instead of getting better.
Instead of better. Mm. Okay. What do you think, Jesse?
And I was taking a look to see which devices really had the kind of the best recognition. Part of it always depends on kind of what you're going to do with the device, because there's also a lot of third-party applications that do their own kind of cloud-based voice recognition, which is very similar to Siri or other services where, you know, in the back and in some closet somewhere that no one can see, it's doing a lot of these voice recognition features that you might need. Can you, for some of the things that you're doing, do you have a use case that you'd be using most of the time? Is it general phone or device functions, or are there specific productivity apps that you might want to use with voice recognition?
Mainly I use texting and emailing, and then, of course, I use the the phone. One of the problems with the phone is if I'm calling back to somebody, because the keypad feature, even the numbers, the phone numbers, you know, so yeah. if I have to enter in somebody's extension, I can't verbally enter in the extension. I have to kind of feel around until I hear, you know, the number 2 or the number 5 come up, and then sometimes if it takes me too long to get to the yeah. the number, then it
clicks it, off.
Yeah, so mainly emailing.
Mainly what, I'm sorry?
For texting and emailing.
Okay.
And I haven't done a lot with a lot of the voice recognition. I know Google's is actually getting really, really good right now, mainly because of the fact they're also, they have a lot of other products that they're trying to sell with the same technologies. Same thing Apple is doing. But a lot of their phones are bundled with that same type of voice recognition software where, you know, you might want a different Google device in your home to, you know, stream music that you can give voice commands to. It uses very similar technology for their phones. It's at least something I'd look into as an option. But I don't know from a practical perspective which one is better, you know, iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. And even looking around on some of the reviews, some of these reviews that I've even seen are actually a couple years old. They don't even have really recent information, which when thinking about voice recognition,
you got to have
it's something that can change very, very rapidly as technology develops. I would actually recommend going to a store, going to your provider store, because they're going to have all the different devices that you can at least test with to see how they work. And I don't know if there are any providers out there that will let you, you know, lease a phone for a couple months and trade it in for another one just to see from a practical perspective how well it works.
Mm-hmm.
And BlackBerry is coming back. I part of me, just knowing the Google landscape with their devices and the development of their technology, I would really consider Google device. Because they are making, you know, constant improvements just like a lot of other vendors, but they're not only catching up, in some ways they're surpassing. So I would actually look in, and BlackBerry is definitely coming back, but I would look, I would look at a Google device, to be honest.
Google has phones out now?
Google does actually have phones out, and they actually also have many other devices that are not even owned by Google. So Samsung makes what they call Android devices, but they're really powered by Google software. And that Google software is available on many of the phones. Some of them might be specific to Google devices, but if you get an Android phone, that's using that same Google software. So you can get, you know, a Samsung device or a device made by another manufacturer, but if it's Android-based, it's still based on that software suite that Google is creating, which does include those voice recognition pieces and a lot of the applications that are already pre-installed. That's not even mentioning any of the other apps that might be available on an app store. And that was one item that I kind of got into, is you can also potentially purchase an application on your iPhone or even one that's free that has different voice recognition software that might work better on a day-to-day basis for you as well.
That would definitely be worth looking at.
Okay, I'll check into that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Chris in Bellevue, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a Mac or an Apple laptop. My daughter wants one when she goes to college next fall. I've always been a PC user, don't know anything about Macs. And earlier you were talking about when to purchase things, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I should get one around this holiday season and that she could use. And since I don't know anything about Apple computers or Apple laptops, what would be a good model to get her that would be suitable for going off to college?
Yeah.
And this always, you know, the big question is, what are they going to be doing for their college studies? Do you know what?
Is she a music major? Is she a science major?
Probably mathematics.
All right.
Okay. So, and I think in most cases, depending on the math, I think most laptops are gonna work well.
Yeah.
The interesting ones with Apple laptops, generally the prices are pretty static. They're going to have different sales. So when are they going to be starting school?
She's starting in the fall.
Okay. Yeah, next fall.
Yeah.
One thing I'd recommend, depending on the school, I would actually take a look, even before buying anything now, depending on when you want to get it, I would actually consider, because a lot of schools, including UW-Madison, we have our own retail areas. The prices change, and every now and again, there's back-to-school sales specifically at the schools. So I would consider taking a look at what's available at their specific school. I think most laptops are going to work well. I don't know if there's going to be a significant price benefit for a Cyber Monday, Black Friday, Black Friday deal for Apple, just because they do tend to be pretty consistent. You go to 10 different manufacturers, they have the same price because Apple tries to keep that pretty static. But there are some other deals that you can get educationally, because there are educational discounts that are available when you are part of a different higher ed institution, which it's possible you could even get that benefit now, even if they're starting next fall.
Yeah. So where is she going to school? If she's going to UW-Madison, for example, she could take advantage of that now, I would think, Jesse, as an example.
Great. Well, we'll find out where she goes to college in a little while. She just turned in her application. So, but that's a good tip. I didn't realize that the prices were static and I shouldn't necessarily look for sales, but rather maybe just look where she's going to school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the only other item I would take a look at, normally they won't reduce the price of a specific laptop, but what they'll do is they'll have little add-on packages.
Yeah.
So buy this laptop and you get a gift card for iTunes, which, if no one ever buys anything on iTunes, it doesn't help. But if you buy music frequently, if you are going to buy applications, I think that, you know, the use of the device is really going to power whether that's going to be worth it for you. Because if you get a gift card for something you're not going to use, well, you know, it's a great gift card, and maybe you can sell it to somebody, but, you know, I'm guessing they frown on that. But I would take a look at to see if there are any specific school discounts. There probably won't be much of a change. And if anything, usually, at least from what I'm taking a look at, they're Black Friday. But once again, these change year to year. So when we could have had a Black Friday sale last year, it could be Cyber Monday this year. So I'd keep an eye on it. But most of the Apple laptops are going to work well for most users. And even for math, you know, with a lot of the power behind these machines for most undergrad studies, I think it should be sufficient. There's a lot of other school resources for that as well.
And if she's applying to, say, 3 or 4 schools, you can go online to those 3 or 4 schools right now if you want.
Great. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, the number to call. Vicki in Berlin up next. Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, my current PC is about 7 to 8 years old, and I'm looking to possibly get a new one. Not sure, like, how much RAM to look for, type of processor, you know, just the basics. I use it for the basics. I don't do gaming or anything else like that. I do it for some printing and some spreadsheets and that.
Photos?
Photos, yes.
Yeah.
And for most computers, I mean, what you're going to see is they have, for PCs, like a Core i3 or a Core i5 or a Core i7, all those, and those are like the big things you see. For a lot of those, I would normally go with a Core i5 at a minimum, just because I think for a day-to-day basis, it's going to be a little bit snappier for you, and you're going to work better.
Right.
As far as memory, you know, when they call RAM, which is, you know, your computer's using that to run programs. The more you have of anything, the better. But obviously, that makes it more expensive. But I would go with 8 gigabytes of RAM at a minimum, because it's going to work well with Windows 10. Because the other thing you always have to think about is you're going to get a new computer now. You might have it for 5 to 10 years, and then you have 5 to 10 years of upgrades that, you know, are going to come out. Things are going to be redeveloped, and some of these upgrades require more power. So having a little bit of breathing room is always good. Normally, I would go with a Core i5, 8 gigabytes of memory, and storage space always really depends on how you're going to use it. If you're storing, and I mean a lot of photos that are really high quality, you might want more storage. But there's a lot of options with flash drives, external media. You have various services that give you cloud storage, so whether it's Dropbox or Google. So there's all sorts of even free options out there.
Joanne, by the way, on Facebook, to go along with this, she was wondering about processors. She's seeing 13, 15, 17, and she's trying to buy a new computer as well and wonders, you know, what's the best here, 13, 15, 17?
Yep, and that's the, so they have the what they call core, and then the i5, i7, and i3. In this case, the i3 is less powerful than the i5, which is less powerful than the i7. So the i7 is the most powerful.
Okay.
The i3 is the least powerful. And I've used i3s. I've actually have a core i3 tablet that works okay, and it does work. But if you want it to be a little bit more responsive and not have to wait as long, I would normally go with a Core i5. Most people it's going to work fine for them. A Core i7, if you're going to be doing something that's a little bit more intensive, or you just...
Games
would be a big one. And if you're going to do games, I'd also consider, you know, an upgraded video card, because that's normally a component. Then a Core i7 is probably where I would go. The more money you're going to spend, usually the more responsive the device is going to be. But for basic use, you can probably get away with a Core i3. If you do, I would get more memory.
Yeah.
Just to help offset the processor usage.
Yeah, the i5 would... Still probably.
Yep. I would
be happier.
Yes.
Yeah, I probably would go with the 5. Do all of the PCs now have the Windows 10?
I'm not sure about all, but I would say most. Windows 10 is going to be pretty standard these days, and they did change a lot of the start menu and a lot of other items people didn't like with Windows 8 and 8.1. So it should be pretty well usable. I've been using Windows 10 for quite some time. I would be surprised if they weren't selling with Windows 10. And if you do have Windows 10, definitely a Core i5 or i7 is going to be better. It's going to be just a little bit more responsive.
They don't come with the Office Suite anymore, though, correct?
They may. That'll depend on the manufacturer, because there's a lot of options now for Office where you can do it completely online. You can download it on your computer. So they have new ways to try to sell that those pieces of software. But it's possible even with free accounts you're going to get what you need with the Office 365 versions that you can even get with different email services. So it's a possibility, but there's a lot of options out there right now to look into.
Yeah.
The best way to transfer the files is to... save it first to an external and then...
That's normally what I would do. I would save it to an external hard drive or a flash drive. Many times, if you do buy a computer with a provider, let's say Best Buy, sometimes, especially during the holiday seasons, they might bundle, will migrate your data and everything for you when you buy this computer here. I would just take a look, because it's possible they're going to have those options and they'll help to do that for you and save you some time.
Yeah.
The only last question I have is, there was a Windows update last week that I did on my current PC, and then I had two printers connected to it, a black and white laser and then a color inkjet, and then I went to print something on the inkjet, and it's gone.
Is it an HP printer?
Yes.
What I would recommend, I would actually go directly to HP's website, so hp.com. They do have a driver download and software update that you can actually get right from their website. You just type in the different printer model that you have, download it, even though you probably already have the software install the latest version. Hopefully it's going to redetect and reconnect.
I don't have to uninstall and then reinstall it?
You shouldn't have to. You know, it always depends on kind of how things go, but usually just reinstalling that software, especially the latest version from HP, is going to help you get that printer reconnected. Sometimes even just unplugging the printer and plugging it back in is going to be enough for it to redetect.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jesse LeGru, our guest today, technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer today and talking Black Friday versus Cyber Monday versus Thanksgiving Day in terms of when to buy electronic items. with our guest, Jesse LeGrew of UW-Madison DeWitt, Division of Information Technology. Join in 800-642-1234. Jeff in Tomahawk has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Hopefully it's a simple question. Every once in a while on my laptop, I'll get like a bottom bar that will appear that says this was blocked because of Silverlight, and it says to install now or remind me later, or I just hit the small X and it just goes away. I'm not really sure what it does or if it's something that is free or I should install.
Okay.
And Silverlight is just like Flash, which is kind of an interactive plugin to do video and text and a lot of other things on websites. Silverlight is a plugin for Microsoft. You can get on a variety of web browsers to give you more interactive content. With interactive content comes the potential security risk of somebody trying to do bad things in your computer, but it's really a multimedia application to give you different content on your web browser. If it's going to help with some of the exploration of the website, you can install it. You can also get it directly from Microsoft if you just want to make sure you're trusting the content. But it's a plugin that Microsoft has had for some time, and generally I would say it's safe to install as long as you know the prompt you're getting is going to download and install a valid version of the software.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jane on Facebook wonders, asks for a suggestion of what item, a book, a gadget, whatever, to get a high school grandson who's interested in a career in artificial intelligence.
And that's an interesting question, kind of, you know, where you want to go with the artificial intelligence, because there's a lot of discussions right now about artificial intelligence and a variety of products and how we're using it, whether it's for voice recognition, whether it's for self-driving cars, or, you know, even people just wondering about the singularity and how, you know, Skynet's going to take over the world. You know, part of me, actually, I'm not sure which way to go on this one, because you can go the, you know, science fiction route to really get that, you know, being energized about the subject matter, which I'm guessing they're already energized about.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there are some great books out there, none of which that I've actually looked at myself. But part of me actually would really want to take a look at some of the more historical items just about artificial intelligence. I don't have a specific gift, unfortunately, in mind. I really wish I just had one. But what I'd probably take a look at, I would actually take a look at, because I think when you think about software or artificial intelligence, it really is a machine that helps to make decisions. And right now, the way we work with that is really through application developers, people who are developing ways for these machines to either learn or to make decisions and to change the way they make decisions over time. So trying to make it like a real mind, what somebody would consider a human mind. I would actually look for anything that is specifically on application development, because I think it's going to be a focus of that artificial intelligence from a functional perspective. So coding, AI. If you know, personally, I like chess. So, you know, if you want to learn about Deep Blue, a lot of the IBM projects are really, really great learning points for artificial intelligence, which are probably going to spawn off, you know, they probably have resources even in some of those materials that are going to give better ideas. But I think it's a good starting point. Mm-hmm. To look at, one, what have we done? Where is that going? And then to, you know, kind of look at, do I want to look at the more, you know, philosophical aspect of artificial intelligence, or the aspect of, I really want to make a thinking machine? And that gets into a different territory. I think I'm leaning more towards the artificial intelligence like starter, which Deep Thinking was a book by Garry Kasparov, just about Deep Blue artificial intelligence. Garry Kasparov's a very, very intelligent person, and kind of talks about really what artificial intelligence is, what he went through, and how that kind of changed how he looked at artificial intelligence from that machine perspective, because no one thought, hey, you can't beat a grandmaster in chess, and, well, it did. So I think that would be a good book to start off with, but there's a lot of great resources out there and a lot of great books. Whether you get a book you listen to or a book that you read, I think Deep Thinking would be a great book to start off with, but there are just so many things.
And there's, for a fun read, there's John Sanford's book called Saturn Run, which is a trip to, it's sort of a futuristic, and we actually fly to Saturn, and there's a lot of artificial intelligence in that book, and it's a kind of a fun read, although there is one minor sex scene in it, but it's not very minor. Saturn Run, I really enjoyed it a lot, and they went to a lot of trouble to get the proper, what is artificial intelligence going to be like in 40 years kind of thing. So I like that book, John Sanford, Saturn Run. And typically it's been out a while, so you can get it for a relatively good price. Let's see. And one other, what about refurbished items? Jim emailed to ask, what do you think about refurbished electronics? He says the prices are very attractive, but are they really back to new condition?
And I'd say, for the most part, yes. I mean, I've had the opportunity to work in kind of a Dell authorized service center and see kind of what that looks like. And I think Dell is a common one that sells refurbished devices. I'd say yes, they can be back to, you know, that factory condition or better. You know, factories mm-hmm. are only as good as factories are, and sometimes things break right off the assembly line. And in those cases, that's where a lot of these refurbished laptops come from. They should work well. You can get great deals. The one thing I would always take a look at for any kind of refurbished device is to verify what the warranty is for that device. Yeah. Because when you buy a brand new computer, you'll get, you know, 1, 2, or 3 year warranty. For a refurbished, it might be different. And I think that's one of the biggest differences between a refurbished and a brand new computer. If you bought a refurbished computer with the same warranty, I'd say, yeah, buy the refurbished computer. It's going to be cheaper. But many times the refurbished devices have a limited warranty. It's going to be 90 days instead of a year. That's where it's a little bit more difficult to make that decision, because it's just an additional risk when that warranty lapses. Is it going to continue to function? And you never know. I've had a computer die after a month. I've had a computer run fine for a decade. You just never know.
Cherie in Antioch, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Cherie.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm wondering if you can solve an enigma. I'm having a problem when I try and open Photos with the photo program, Windows. It says, it looks like you don't have permission to view this file. Check the permissions and try again.
And
there's a little padlock on the file image when I look at it in Explorer.
Is the file itself stored on your computer? Is it stored on an external hard drive or on a flash drive?
Well, it's stored on an external. But even if I move it, what I'm thinking is it might have something to do with the fact that I had to reformat my machine after there was some kind of a virus, and I may have changed the name of my user account. I can't remember what I used to call myself.
And so this one actually should be pretty easy. I'm guessing for the computer that you're using right now, even after it's all redone, you have the capability of installing software, and you probably have administrative rights on your computer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What I would do is you should be able to right-click. But whenever you see that lock, it really just means you don't have access. It's locked out because, in this case, what they call NTFS or Windows Security Rights. What you're going to want to do is actually probably, I'm guessing all your photos are in a folder?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What you'll probably want to do is actually right-click on the folder, and they have an option to go to Properties. And under properties, they're going to have several tabs. One of those is going to be security.
Okay.
And you can actually grant yourself rights to that folder. Mm-hmm. And usually near the top, it has an edit button, and you can actually add your own user account. And it'll actually change permissions so it can add full administrative rights for your user account onto your hard drive. And you can do that for the entire drive. You can do that for specific folders. And I've had this happen before. It's kind of weird because depending on when you redo your computer, usually it just works fine. But you're just, those security rights you'll be able to change since you have administrative rights on your computer. And it's going to be through that security tab on the Explorer properties. So Explorer will basically change a permission, so you just have to tell Explorer, give me access, and it will be able to do that for you. Normally it'll say, it'll have a button like run as administrator, you say yes, and it'll allow you to do whatever you need to do.
Wow. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another quick way to do it, and I'll just throw this out there, if you try to copy the files to your desktop, it will most likely prompt you don't have access. You need to run this as administrator, and hopefully you can click yes, and it'll actually copy it to your desktop. That's one way to get access to it right away. And then you could always, if you wanted to, but granted, make sure you have backups, you can reformat that drive to make it, you know, clean again, and then copy the photos or any of the files back. That's another option, but you do want to make sure that you do have access when you do copy them back over.
There you go. Thank you, Cherie. Appreciate the call. Jesse LeGrue, our guest today from the Division of Information Technology at UW. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. So you stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at your computer today, talking a little bit about purchasing electronics during the holiday season with Jesse LeGrue, Technical Team Lead with the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us. Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And we're going to turn back to the phones and to Chuck in Whitewater next. Chuck, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I was wondering if there are any apps I can download that would allow me to use my computer as a DVD recorder for television programs.
There is. But I can't think of what it is. There is an app.
There are actually quite a few. So it kind of depends on how you have. Are you able to actually view TV on your computer itself?
Yeah, I'm using a program called US TV Now.
Okay. There are quite a few actually. Yeah. I can't think of one off the top of my head that is like completely free. Let's see. And you're using a PC, I'm guessing, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I know that one product that I've heard about before was Dazzle, that you can use to record DVDs. And there are a lot of other free programs that might be able to do it as well. When you're viewing TV on your computer, is it using that one application?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything? Oh, I'm trying. I'm thinking of a lot of different ways right now to do it. Because
I have a friend who does it on her phone. She can, if she's away, she can go to her phone and set it. She can even set her turn her heat up and down in the house. She turns it down and she turns it up. Say if she's coming back from Milwaukee or something and she's had it down, she just turns it up, and by the time she gets back, the house is warm again.
And I'm guessing for yours, do you physically want to record it to a DVD specifically, or do you want to have it offline and available for you to just be able to watch it anytime? Is a DVD specifically what you're looking for?
No, just having it offline and available would be good.
Okay. There are a lot of programs out there that can do it, and actually a lot of them are screen capture pieces of software. I use it for creating training videos, actually. I've used, for example, Snag. It's a program that you can use to create screen captures and to narrate at the same time. I'm pretty sure a lot of those will also take the audio and video from your computer, and I think Snag actually can do that and actually record it. I don't know how the quality, to be honest, is going to look, because I haven't tried it myself. It would work. I just don't know how that quality is going to compare. A lot of those programs do have free trials where you can actually give it a shot. I know Snagit does have, I think, a 7-day or 15-day free trial. The only thing that I would be uncertain of is, you know, when you record it, what's the legality of recording the video? That's the only thing I'm uncertain of. But screen capture software is one place I would go right away. And because that way, you know, those aren't specific to storing it on a DVD. They just create files that you can save. You can put them on an external hard drive. You can put them on a flash drive and do whatever you need to do with it. But I would probably start there. And I'm trying to think of any other program that I've used in the past. I used to have video cards that you can plug in, you know, coaxial cable in your computer, and it had specific software that you could actually view and record. But I would actually look at screen capture software as a kind of a first step and see how those work. And I really have liked Snagit in the past, but there are a lot of them out there. And Snagit's been around since not even just doing full video capture, but just doing, initial screenshots. So it's a very well-developed program.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Jonathan in Mozanie has a suggestion for us, I think. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Larry. Been a long-time listener. I'm glad I finally had something to contribute. I was in response to one of your listeners who had a question about a gift idea for a high school age person who's interested in artificial intelligence. I was thinking the Raspberry Pi. You know, it's a little single board computer that's pretty much open source, and there's lots of projects and things out there. I think Google actually released their Alexa software for Android in a developer model that can be tinkered with, and really just the device itself is pretty much made for fooling around on and doing a lot of kind of homebrew computing projects and things like that. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to play with.
That is cool. Raspberry Pi, huh?
Correct. Yeah, Pi is in the mathematical symbol.
Right.
Yep.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great suggestion. I just pulled it up too, because Raspberry Pis can do for a lot of home automation. You can do really whatever you want. It's very, very flexible. And found an article just about you can get their artificial intelligence on the Raspberry Pi, and there's a few articles out there on how to do that. But if anyone just, Googles artificial intelligence in Raspberry Pi, Pi being P-I, it'll pop up. And they have some information there. So that's a great, great suggestion.
Thank you, Jonathan.
No problem, Larry. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good talking to you. Great tip. Lyle and Avery, it's your turn. Hi, Lyle.
Good afternoon. I have a question on accessing Ancestry Family Tree from a Chromebook. Is there any way I can do that? Is there something I can buy to access from a Chromebook? It was originally created on a Toshiba laptop.
Do you know if the data? So they have a few different things, because they also kind of have their cloud service where they're actually storing a lot of your ancestry data. Are you utilizing their cloud service, and have any of your information stored in their cloud service, or is it a file you have on your computer?
It's a file that I have saved on a flash drive.
Okay. The short answer, I think the quick answer is no. However, they do have an application for Family Tree Maker, and it can access Family Tree Maker data. But I believe what you would need to do is actually take your data that you had from the Toshiba laptop and put it into the Family Tree Maker cloud service. And then they do have a free application you can install on Android devices, and they probably also have them for even iPhone devices, where you can view and modify that data. but you need to get it from that file that you have up into their cloud service. So you'd still actually have to have probably that full featured program installed on a PC so that you can actually get it in there. So yeah, you can do it, but there's probably one or two steps you need to get to before you're able to. And I don't know, and I wasn't able to dive in too deeply into it. Places that actually offer that kind of service, because it's something that a lot of people are very interested in. And with that kind of conversion from the standard it's on my computer to it's in the cloud, there are probably some other groups out there that actually might do conversion services. I just don't know any off the top of my head.
Okay, thanks. That's a great answer.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Charlene in Mondovi, it's your turn. Hi, Charlene.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for talking to me.
Sure.
I have a problem that's not, I have a great laptop that I purchased 5 years ago from Lenovo. I lived in Whitefish, Montana. I now live in Mondovi, but for some reason my computer thinks I live in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Ah.
So I get storm alerts for Wausau. Whenever I try to create a map, it wants to start in Wausau. But it doesn't pop up all the time, and I'm wondering how I can change that.
Hmm. And so are you using a laptop right now, or what kind of device are you using?
It's a laptop.
Okay. What's the application you're using that's kind of showing you the location when you're trying to build maps?
That would be, what's the most common one?
Google Maps.
Yeah, I use Google Maps, and I use the other one that's, I just hit maps on my search, and they come up.
Okay, and so this is actually probably going to be a little bit difficult. Are you using a specific internet connection that you plug into, or are you using a wireless service?
I plug into the worst internet connection in the world. I'm in Northwest Wisconsin, and my speed is equal to or worse than Venezuela.
Oh.
So I plug it in via the phone lines because that's all I can get here.
Okay.
And my voice is shaking because I'm so upset.
Yeah.
Half the time it goes down. Half the time I can't. I might be into something. I can't really do a YouTube video on something I'm trying to learn because it stops. I did a 30-hour continuing education class that took me 53 hours. So what can I do about that one, too?
I guess I'll comment on a little bit on both. So your computer, it tries to figure out your location based on your internet connection.
Yes.
Depending on where it is, it will really just do its own thing. The only thing you can do when you use your maps, is it for directions, or are there like specific like maps or cartography or anything like you're building?
No, it's usually maps or, you know, say I'm going to Denver and I'm looking for a couple stops and I'm doing that.
Yeah, I think the only way that I can think of is actually manually overriding every single time that preference. I haven't specifically tried to do that for Google Maps before. It's a possibility that you can actually specify under your places if you're logged in with your Google or Gmail account.
Okay.
To actually specify, you know, you have a home location, this is what my address is, and at least you can quickly override that setting. Because otherwise it's just going to grab it from your network connection, which that might save you some time. It's not a long-term fix. I'd actually have to dig more into the Google apps, but I would recommend, you know, being signed into a Google account of some sort where you can start building preferences, and it might have a preference where you can do that for any search you make. Always make this a starting location. It's possible. I'm just not sure if that's an item that it has for you.
So I have a question to add to that. So if I took my laptop to, let's say, the library in Eau Claire,
okay,
and I've never done that and tried to map it out or have it, might the location show up as the proper location?
In theory, if you went to the Eau Claire library and were using their wireless and it tried to find your current location, it's probably going to be much more accurate because there's much more infrastructure and items for Google to figure out where you are. So there's a very high chance that it's going to be a lot more accurate.
So this is not a problem probably with my hard drive and my laptop. It's probably a problem with my connection here.
Correct. The way they try to figure out where you're located is based on the knowledge they have, which is what wireless access points are you using, where are those located on our general map. You know, Google has this just massive database of things, including wireless devices, and so they build maps geographically based on what they know of internet connections. So it really, it's less to do with your computer and probably more to do with your internet connection, which is that secondary item. Which I would look for, you know, there are a lot of metropolitan, like, wireless networks that may or may not be available. But one thing I've been hearing a lot about recently, which I haven't utilized, people use it for phone as well, is Google Fi. That could be an option that you could research that might be able to give you some faster internet. But since I haven't looked at it too much, I'm not sure of, you know, the service availability and where it is.
Say that again. It's
Google Fi.
Okay.
All right. Worth a look.
It is. Everything's worth a look. I've tried everything out here, and we're just in an odd spot. But there's thousands of us.
Yeah.
And we can't get our provider who has is the sole provider here to upgrade, yeah. Even though we know there's funds available. So we'll all go and check out Google.
All right. Thank you, Charlene. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy. Irene and Phillips, it's your turn. Hi, Irene.
Hi, good afternoon. Quick question, it's a hard one for me, hopefully simple for you folks. How do I block pop-up ads? I believe I have MSN as my homepage here. And, I mean, the whole page is almost taken up by pop-up ads. Is there a way to block them for free, or do I have to pay, or should I go to Google or something else?
There are a couple things. One thing I'd recommend is to, and this is a free program, it's called Super Anti-Spyware, all one word. I would recommend downloading that program. Once again, it's free, and running it with all of your web browsers closed, just to make sure if there is anything generating web pop-ups, it's likely to try to remove those. So that way, it kind of cleans up your entire desktop environment a little bit. So that's the first thing I'd do. The second thing is just make sure your computer is updated. They have a lot of blocking features built into Internet Explorer, for example, that will help with those problems. And there's kind of a potential third item, which some of the pop-up ads that you actually get from various websites, you can't do anything about. The way that the websites are actually created, sometimes you'll get them kind of sliding in from the bottom or sliding in from the side. For some of those, you can't do anything without turning off website features that break the website. And usually at those points is where I just start looking at different websites, because it's difficult to get through some of the content, because they almost force you to get through those ads. So first, I would run Super Anti-Spyware. Hopefully, if you're getting things that are just randomly popping up, hopefully it's going to resolve that problem for you. But they do have built-in pop-up blockers within a lot of the web browsers. I would just verify... go to your tools or settings, and they usually have a security feature for pop-up blockers. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's turned on, because maybe it's turned off, and that could be part of the issue. So just make sure your pop-up blocker is turned on. Make sure your computer is clean using what they call malware, anti-malware, or anti-spyware programs, and that should help to clean that up at least as much as you can. And Super Anti-Spyware, and there's other programs out there that also have their own kind of pop-up blocker features. But generally, the built-in ones, as long as your system's clear, will help quite a bit.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks so much for calling. Drew from Wanakee has questions about shopping for televisions. Where do you recommend doing online research for flat screen TVs? And his last TV was over $2,000 and lasted only 5 years. if he can get it fixed, is it worth it? Do you recommend getting an extended warranty on a TV?
This actually probably comes a lot to personal preference. Me, I probably wouldn't get an extended warranty, but I tend to be maybe a little bit riskier with mm-hmm. those kinds of purchases. As far as whether it's worth getting the TV fixed, I would actually take a look at the raw specifications for the TV, look up new TVs, and just see what the price comparison is. Most likely, it's probably going to be worth just buying a new TV.
Yeah.
There have been so many different technology updates over the last 5 years. It always happens. I'm happy and also disappointed my plasma TV hasn't broken yet. And I've had it for quite a while, but when it breaks, yeah, there's going to be no reason to fix it. There's something lighter that has better resolution, that has smart TV features built in that my TV didn't. So usually, especially for 5 years, I would look heavily into buying a new one. As far as where to look, I'm a big person on reviews. So I would go to any place you can get great reviews where people have been able to use the device and you can get feedback. I would actually look, my first go is usually Amazon. I go to Amazon because they have a lot of products, including TVs. One item you might want to take a look at is if your old TV is actually on Amazon's website still, look up the reviews for it. You might actually find other people who have purchased the TV that have maybe had different experiences where they can give you some input that otherwise you might not have been able to find. But I like to go on online stores. I do reviews there. You can always go in stores as well. But for the online resources, you're gathering feedback from really anyone, you know, throughout the world. So it's a good place to go.
Patrick on Facebook wonders if he should buy a Sling adapter, and if so, which one?
And I'm not sure of the Sling adapter. It's actually something I hadn't heard about before. I think it was related to TV viewing, but I haven't personally used any of them myself, so I don't have a good recommendation. But if there is more information on exactly kind of what the device is doing, it would be good to know.
So are you going to be purchasing any electronics for the holidays this year?
I'm not sure yet. I bought my Fitbit. And it's working really well. Normally, I think I'm pretty good with technology. I have my Google phone, which works pretty well. But I think I'm good with the Fitbit. I'm not sure if there's anything technology related that's in my future. You know, once again, I would like to get a new TV, but I think there are other things I could probably do before that point.
Yeah, I've been thinking about Fitbit myself just because of the sleep cycle part of it. I use MapMyRun for my running, and that has proven to be a really handy thing. And mostly what it does is it just keeps you going because there are a lot of contests and things of that nature that they have. And once in a while, I'll win a T-shirt or something for something that I've some... event that I have, you know, surpassed, and that's always been a lot of fun for me. So, but I'm that sleep cycle business sounds really interesting to me. So I may have to go there and see if I'm really getting any sleep at all.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really useful. I really enjoy it.
Well, Jesse, as always, it's a great pleasure. You're going to be back on January 8th. So we'll probably find out about all the purchases people made that aren't turning out the way they wanted.
Well, it's always a good time for New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, we'll do that as well. Jesse LeGrew is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And so he'll be back January 8th. Tomorrow, Patricia McConnell comes back, and we'll talk... with her about how you can safely get your pet through the holiday season, and she'll answer your pet behavior questions as well. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.